Welcome to the Spark Weekly. I'm Scott Lamar. Coming up this week, a Cumberland County woman talks about her experience on PBS's Finding Your Roots with Dr. Henry Louis Gates Jr., where she learned about her family history. Also on the program, Marquise Lupton's insightful conversation with breastfeeding advocate Norma Vasquez. Finding Your Roots with Dr. Henry Louis Gates Jr. is one of the most popular TV shows on PBS. Every Tuesday at 8 p.m., Dr. Gates leads a celebrity through their family histories. What makes the show so fascinating is the mysteries uncovered about their families. Recently, Finding Your Roots did something it had never done before. It offered viewers of the program, people who aren't considered celebrities, an opportunity to go on the show and trace their family's histories. 9,000 viewers applied. Three were chosen to appear on the show. Megan Robertson of Mechanicsburg was one of them, and she's with us today on The Spark. Megan Robertson, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, I have seen the show.
Okay.
You haven't.
I haven't. No, I won't watch it
yet. Well, they say Megan Robertson of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Of Harrisburg?
Yeah. So I'll kind of let the cat out of the bag with that.
Okay.
So the episode was recorded, and it will air nationally on WITF and PBS Tuesday night at 8. Has all this sunk in yet?
No, it hasn't. I mean, the original journey started back in November of 2022, so it seems completely surreal that it's here.
22. So it's been that long.
It really has. So Dr. Gates had put out an open casting in November of 22 for regular Americans to send them their family mystery. And I sent in a video that day, and I didn't hear anything for months. And every once in a while, my dad, because I had told him that I was going to apply, every once in a while he would ask me if I had heard anything, and I was like, no. So I figured maybe they were going in a different direction or something. And then July of 23 is when I finally got an email, and the email, all caps, said, Finding Your Roots Casting. And if they emailed me at 11:50, I emailed them back at 11:52. I was so excited. So they asked to interview me, and they ended up doing a Zoom interview, I think, the next day. And it went really well, I guess. So,
what did they ask you during the interview?
During the interview, they had just asked me to kind of reiterate what my family mystery was, that my great-grandfather was adopted, and what kind of things we had tried to find the answers. So I told them that we had done 23andMe and that a couple of my family members had gone to cemeteries and to courthouses, but that nothing had been found.
Mm. So that first Zoom interview, how long did it last?
About 20 minutes.
20 minutes. And then after that, when did you find out that you actually were selected?
Well, by the time I got home from that Zoom interview, they had already sent me paperwork. So it went really well. And they wanted me to fill out any type of genealogy information that I could remember. So I filled it out. I sent it back to them. And probably within a week or two, they had sent me a few DNA test kits to do with my dad and send them back. And then at the beginning of August, they said, hey, at the end of August, can we Zoom you again? And I said, sure. So it was a couple weeks out, and it got to the day of our Zoom meeting. And I remember talking to my husband, Tyler, and I said, you know, like, either they're going to let me down or they're going to tell me I'm in, because why would they want to Zoom me? And we got on, and we were just chit-chatting, and they started in with it was a really hard decision. And I was like, oh, no, here we go. And they said, but there's just one more person you have to talk to. And I said, okay. And the screen went blank, and up popped Dr. Gates. And the reaction in the trailer when I said, hi, that was my reaction. That was they were recording it. And we talked about West Virginia, because he's from West Virginia, and I went to WVU. And we talked about that for a couple of minutes. And then he said, I just wanted to tell you, you're going to be on Finding Your Roots.
Wow.
So, yeah, I know.
Did they say what in particular they liked about you?
No. I meant to ask, because out of 9,000 people, I know that they had it narrowed down to 10 for a while. And they said when I was out there filming that they had argued about us 10 for a while and finally realized that they couldn't figure out just one. So that's why they picked three.
Okay, so someone who has been in the media for a long time, one thing I could say is you definitely have the personality.
Oh, thank you.
So I think that's one of the reasons that they probably selected you, is that you have a great personality.
Thank you.
Now, what was the mystery? What did you want to find out?
So my dad's grandfather was named Green Marshall Church. And
by the way, your maiden name is Church.
My maiden name was Church.
So
yes.
You were Megan Church.
Yes, okay. I was Megan Church for a long time, and I'm Megan Robertson. But Green Marshall Church was born in North Carolina, and we knew very little about him as a person, because his son, my grandfather's name was Eugene Dewey Church. Everybody called him Dude. And my grandfather was only about 5 years old when Green passed away. So he was a railroad worker in West Virginia and was tragically killed on the railroad. So my grandfather didn't have any information about his dad. So there was no information to be had, because although Green's widow, my dad remembers her, they called her Ma Church. Although he knew her, I don't know that Green shared a lot about his past because it was maybe painful for him. I don't know that he shared it with his wife, his widow. So there was no information to be had by anybody. So I remember growing up, and when we would do like school projects on our background, or like, hey, where'd your last name come from? I would go to my dad and say, where did Church come from? And he was like, well, it can go back to here, but we don't know. So we were always told that was his adopted name, and we didn't know what his actual last name would have been. Mm. So
he was adopted. Your great-grandfather was adopted.
Yes. We knew that he was adopted, and he was raised in North Carolina by two women, but we didn't know much about the women. We didn't know if they – we were told that they were sisters, but we didn't know if they were sisters or if they were sisters of his dad or sisters of his mom or anything like that. So
who was actually killed in the railroad accident?
Green.
Green was actually killed when
in Welch, West Virginia.
When your grandfather was 5 years old.
Was five,
Oh, that's...
So, I mean, and my grandfather has a younger sibling. His name's Cliff. And Cliff is alive and well and living in Florida. So we got to tell him all about the show and that we were going to find out information about his grandparents.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there is... information, as I said earlier, I've seen the show, but you haven't.
Correct.
So you don't know what the final show... How long did it take to tape, by the way?
The entire taping was on Halloween, and it was about 6 hours. So we stopped for lunch, but it was a long day of taping.
Yeah. Where did you tape?
We taped in Los Angeles.
Oh, so yeah, you got to go to L.A.?
Yeah, they flew me out to L.A. And it was completely wild because, you know, being a 39-year-old speech therapist from central Pennsylvania... And getting to L.A. and there's a man standing there with a little placard with my name on it and taking my bags to my car. It was surreal.
Okay, this is big time now.
Right.
You know, I said earlier that this show was unique because it is non-celebrities. You realize, of course, you may be a celebrity after this, at least in central Pennsylvania. Well, I don't know. The way you've described... Because we had a conversation when we were on ABC 27 for Good Day PA, that your family is very excited to see the show.
They're really excited.
There are people coming from other states?
Yes. A couple of my cousins are driving in from West Virginia and Virginia. A few of my aunts are coming in for the Whitaker Center event, and then...
which is tomorrow, Saturday. WITF, we're having a genealogy fair. It is sold out right now, but we do have people... there's a waiting list if you'd like to go to WITF.org, but we're going to see a preview on Saturday, as well as there are going to be other people there talking about genealogy and researching your family histories. So getting back to your family coming in.
Yep, so they're very excited. I have told everyone all of the information that I know, though. So it's not a surprise, but I think they're going to be excited to see the show and see all the pictures, because in addition to flying to L.A. and everything, they sent a production assistant to our house and scanned in probably over 100 family photos. So it'll be interesting to see which ones they use and who's going to be on the screen. So
during Finding Your Roots... Two of the big events, there's a book that they produce of your family history as well as a family tree.
Yeah.
Let's start with the family tree poster.
Yes. So the poster, they sent it home with me that day. I flew home with it. And it is, it's not as tall as I am, but it is up to my shoulders, the poster tube. And it is a good 4 feet by 5 feet of our ancestral tree. So it's no siblings or anything like that, but it goes me and then parents, 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 parents the whole way up.
How far back?
Oh, pretty far back.
So it doesn't just stop with green.
No, it goes way far back.
How far?
I think on my dad's side to my 12th great-grandfather.
What years were those?
1549, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah.
So where are you going to put this poster?
I don't know yet. We've been talking about it. We don't know how practical it is to have framed or how expensive it will be to be framed or where to put it after it's framed. But I do. They did provide me with a digital copy. So I could potentially, you know, have smaller ones made.
but you gotta have the big one.
It is pretty grand.
You have to have the big one.
It's pretty fantastic. So I flew home with that. And what's funny is all over the poster tube is written the word baggage because I didn't know that I needed to have it. The show had told me initially, ask them to put it in the coat closet on the plane. And I said, okay. So I got there and I asked them. They were like, we don't have coat closets. So I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. So I explained to the lady very nicely what it was and that I needed to go home with it. Like it could not be with me.
Yeah.
And she wrote baggage all over it so it wouldn't go in the freight section of the plane, and it came home. It got to Baltimore with me. So
that's good. That's good. You don't want it to end up in some other city.
But I do find it pretty funny that it says baggage all over my family tree.
We were asking about the poster. You also get a book.
Yes.
That has all the information.
The
what
book
they
of
found.
Life. Yeah.
I understand the book is being delivered to your home or your dad's home today.
Uh-huh. So I knew I wouldn't be home, and it has to have a signature. So I had it sent to my mom and dad's house, and he just texted me that he has it. So.
So you're dying to get out of here and go see the book, right?
Yeah.
Have they opened it yet? You know?
I don't think so. I asked him to wait so that I could open it with him.
So have you told the family what was found?
Yes. So I was so thrilled. As soon as I got back to the hotel from filming, I called everybody and told them.
So your dad in particular was very interested because this is Green was his grandfather.
Yeah. And he was named for him. So my dad's name is Eugene Green or Gene Green Church. Right. And he got his he
Gene
got part of his
Green
name.
Church.
Gene Green.
Yeah. He lived with that his whole life. Huh?
Yes, he did. Yeah.
You told
not,
me
not a huge
something.
Fan
he
of
was
that
not
name.
Happy
yeah.
About that.
Yep.
Mr. Church, sorry about that. Anyway, so the book, you'll get to see the book today.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about Green.
So what I know about Green, he was a veteran of World War One. He was served in France during World War One. And I don't know what they put in the episode, but I know like what battles he was in over there now. I didn't know any of that. I mean, we had some of his service records from the military, but I didn't know a whole lot about that.
Now, one of the things I understand that you were interested in was your family's health history.
Yeah.
23andMe, I know, has part of it. You can check your genetics a little bit. Did you learn anything about your health history? Because wasn't there some cancer in your family that you were concerned about?
Yeah. So I know that that Ma Church passed away in Baltimore at Johns Hopkins from cancer. I'm not quite sure what kind of cancer.
How old was she?
I believe she was in her 60s, maybe 70s.
Okay, okay.
When she passed away, I would have to look. I'm not sure. But, you know, I do have several family members who are cancer patients. So it definitely,
Did you learn anything about your family health history through this?
Not a whole lot.
Not a whole lot. Okay.
And honestly, when I did 23andMe years ago, I never opened my health history. I didn't want to know yet what my genetics said for myself. Like if I was predisposed to certain things, I never opened that.
Now, when Finding Your Roots is doing their investigation, if you want to call it that, you know, they're looking through documents and all that, but they also use DNA.
Yeah.
And I hope I'm not letting a cat out of the bag here, but they used on the program, they show that they used DNA to trace down Green's parents and, you know, some of his background.
Yeah.
What did you learn from the DNA results?
So, Green having the last name Church, we always knew that that was his adopted last name. So we didn't know who his dad was or what his last name should have, would have, could have been. So,
and we're not going to divulge that.
We
on
won't
today's
divulge
program.
That part. You'll have to tune in for that part. But there had always been last names that we had heard. Oh, maybe it's Holtz, Holtz. That was one that was always told. Or Moxley was another one that we were told. And so in the show, they used genome testing. So the one test that they sent my dad was a genome test. And in part of the show, Dr. Gates has on several different pages the number of people with certain last names who match me or my dad. And it's 0, 0, and then all of them. So we find out what my last name should have, could have, would have been.
So one of the things that Dr. Gates talked about was he called you Megan Moxley.
Yeah, he did at one point. He did. Yeah,
you didn't have a great
and I
reaction.
Was like, no, that doesn't sound right. No. Megan Moxley, no. Definitely not a Moxley.
So what are your reactions? Tell us a little bit about taping the show itself, and as you're learning these things, I mean, you're learning them live.
Yeah, absolutely.
As it's being recorded.
Yes.
And you said, even when we did the ABC 27 Good Day PA thing, that you're very emotional.
I am, and I try not to be, but I cry at the drop of a hat. So, I mean, I don't know if you saw this week's episode, but at the end, they kind of showed a preview of next week's episode. And I said, I try not to cry through the whole thing. But it's true. I tried not to cry through the whole thing because my poor makeup artist is sitting off stage, you know, like, oh, I have to go fix that, you know.
Oh, my makeup artist.
Oh, my makeup artist. Her name was Morgan, and she was fantastic. But yeah, she had to come in and touch me up so many times. But I remember, so during the reveal of last names, I turned the page, I read the last name, and I like ugly cried on national television. And I remember I put my hands over my face and I do what I always do. And I was like, I'm so sorry. And one of the camera guys from off stage goes, just keep crying. It's a money shot. And I was like, okay, I'm sorry. But I was trying not to cry all my makeup off.
Well,
but yeah.
What made you so emotional?
Just knowing that I was going to get to call my family members later and tell them that it wasn't any last name we had ever heard of, and that it was this last name from out of the blue that we had never heard that last name in any of anything that we had ever looked at through or anything like that.
Also, and again, I'm not going to give away too much, but Dr. Gates says during the program that you came in expected to be angry.
Yeah, I did.
But you said you weren't angry.
I wasn't.
Okay. Why did you expect to be angry?
The story that I grew up with was that Green's mom, the reason why she gave him up for adoption was that she was a teenager. And I had always thought, like, how did that happen? Like, just how did that happen? Was it consensual? Like, that kind of thing. And I remember thinking that as soon as I found out who the dad was, I was going to be mad at him. You know, that I was going to be mad at him. That, why did you do that? And how could you have done that? And then it turned out completely different. So, yeah.
Were you happy?
I was happy to have the information. It was, it's a twisted, it became kind of like a Maury episode, you know? Like, so trying to figure out who the dad was. But yeah, I mean, it was a journey.
Well, I can tell you from seeing the show that it's not quite like a Maury
episode. Good. Nobody's running off the stage.
No, I'm sure there are a lot of people who ask you about Henry Louis Gates and what he was like during the program.
Gosh. He was wonderful, so personable, and really looking out for me. Like, if I started crying, he was asking for Kleenexes, and, you know, and he was like, do you need to stop and get a drink? Do you want a soda? Like, just very, very accommodating. He was absolute gem. He's emailed me back and forth a couple times since the show. Just a treasure.
Like, wow, that's, yeah, that, I mean,
he's fantastic.
Great. That's
yeah.
great. Oh, well, is there anything that really, really surprised you? Something that you always remember that you went in and said, oh, this is, you know, I never expected that, because almost every episode of Finding Your Roots,
yeah.
the celebrity would say, I never expected that.
I mean, obviously, finding out the last name was a huge shock. Being able to... they also did my mom's side of the family.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, so they did my mom's side of the family, which I did not expect them to do that. So finding out where they came from, and they told me, like, where in Pennsylvania they...
Any famous people in the background?
No.
Any outlaws?
Or... outlaws and in-laws? No. No.
Well, I got to tell you that you've just been a treasure to have
Thank
on
you.
The air with us today, and really looking forward to Saturday
yes.
at WITF Genealogy Fair when we see the preview, and then it airs nationally.
Yes.
You ever think you'd hear that?
No,
your
never.
Your story airs nationally
oh
Tuesday
gosh.
Night at 8 o'clock on PBS and WITF. Megan Robertson, thank you very much for being with
Thanks
us today.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up on the second half of the Spark Weekly, Marquise Lupton's insightful conversation with breastfeeding advocate Norma Vasquez. You're listening to the Spark Weekly. I'm Scott Lamar.
Welcome back to the Spark Weekly. I'm Marquise Lupton. Norma Vasquez is a certified lactation counselor who has been working in public health for 16 years, and she recently has focused her efforts on providing lactation support to birthing persons in her community through her position as a lactation counselor at Penn Medicine Lancaster General Health and as a founder and birth and postpartum doula at Mama Le Leche. The business she founded after witnessing firsthand the racial disparities BIPOC individuals face when it comes to breastfeeding. And today on the Spark Weekly, we chatted about her advocacy work for breastfeeding. Norma, thank you for joining us on the Spark today. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
Yes. So look, this is obviously not new to me, but it's a little foreign, which is why I'm glad that you came on today. So, how did you get into this world of breastfeeding advocacy?
Honestly, from having my youngest daughter, I have three girls, and my breastfeeding experience with them was really different. And for my youngest daughter, who's turning 9 in a couple of weeks here, I was facing some challenges, and I was really able to connect with a lactation consultant, and my breastfeeding journey with her spanned over a couple of years. She
Wow.
did really, really well. And so while I was breastfeeding her, I was just because I was able to meet my own goals, I just kind of wanted to share that. And I shared it online, on social media, how things were. And then through that, I just started, you know, supporting friends or family who were having babies. And a job just kind of fell in my lap and said, you know, Penn Medicine is looking for a peer counselor. Are you interested? And I think I was working like 2 days later. Like, never
Oh, wow.
thought my life would end up where it is now. From breastfeeding.
Yeah. So this is going to sound like a dumb question. I'm sorry. And I'm sorry, America, for this. But how essential is breastfeeding? What are the benefits?
Oh, my goodness. The benefits are not only for baby, but also, you know, for moms as well. So, you know, for babies, it's the healthiest thing that you can give to your baby. You know, breast milk is made specifically for your individual baby, which is mind-blowing. Mm. And we can talk about that all day. There's so many different components in breast milk. It helps, you know, to reduce the risk of allergies and asthma and diabetes and obesity. Mm. And with mom, it helps to reduce the risk of cancer and postpartum depression, which is huge. There's just so many benefits to offering breast milk. And, you know, even if it's just, you know, if you don't have to be breastfeeding for a whole year, the benefits are there even if you're breastfeeding for a month or 6 months or a year or longer.
Mm, so what are some of the biggest stigmas when it comes to breastfeeding and advocating for breastfeeders?
Yeah, I mean, you know, judgment.
Yeah.
You know, how people feel and you know, and when people feel uncomfortable, they say and do just, you know, really not so nice things.
Yeah.
And, so a lot of people don't feel supported. And then, I think that would be like the biggest thing, right? Is that is moms not feeling supported.
And how essential is that support? Because from doing this research, not every woman has that level of support, has that village, so to speak, that you can lean on when breastfeeding or when having difficulties breastfeeding. So how essential is it to have that support, to have that village?
That support is everything to a birthing parent. It really, we have to remember that, when moms are in this like postpartum, even pregnancy, phase, but like, once babies are here and they're in the thick of it and they feel like they can't make it, or they are, dealing with whatever issues, whether baby's not latching correctly, or they feel like they don't have enough milk supply. And they don't have someone to turn to either vent or get help, like whatever mechanically isn't going right with breastfeeding at that point. If they don't have anyone to turn to, then they're left in their thoughts. And when we're left in our thoughts, we begin to doubt ourselves, right? About how we're showing up for our kids, our babies, our families. And then that just kind of trickles down as to how we show up as women, as if we're in a relationship, how we're showing up in that relationship, how we're showing up to our friends. I mean, it really does trickle down. So that support is absolutely everything, and it should be made accessible to everyone. And unfortunately, it's not.
Now, before I get to the biggest problems you've seen with breastfeeding, I do want to highlight this closet that you have, this lactation supply closet that includes breast pumps, storage bags, nursing pillows. What is that exactly, and why did you start it?
Yeah, so it goes hand in hand with my support group that I have at the YWCA. So I really wanted, so let me just go back a little bit. I used to work for a program that Penn Medicine offered, and it was a program specifically for parents who were on Medicaid. Beautiful program. I used to, be an in-home visitor, offering lactation support. But while working there, I was like, this should be something that's available to all parents, and it's not. And I was like, a lot of us fall through the cracks. And I even thought of myself, and I'm like, I would be a mom that wouldn't qualify for this program, but like, I still need support, right? So we need support no matter what our journey is. And I really wanted to create a space that women and people could just walk in and get that postpartum support, get that lactation support, not have to pay for it, not have to register for it, not have to prove that they're falling within some sort of guidelines. And so along with that, I also wanted to offer supplies, because a lot of the reasons we stop breastfeeding, it could be as easy as like we didn't have storage bags to pump into, like we didn't have breast pads, like we didn't have a breast pump, And so I wanted to create a space that offered all of that. And so I was able to connect with some grants, apply for some grants, and get some grant funding. And yeah, so it's there. It's available for anyone. Tons of supplies, always available every Wednesday from 10:30 to 12 at the YWCA.
And for the listener that's listening at home, how would they contact you to access this closet?
So the closet is only accessible every Wednesday. So every Wednesday from 10:30 to 12, they could just walk in. And I always say, don't feel pressured that like you need to stay for the support group. If the support group is what you need, if you want to, that's great. If you just need to come in because you need to grab some breast pads, or you need a nursing bra or a pumping bra, then come in for that. It's not, I don't have standards as far as like how long you have to stay or or be like an active part of the group.
All right, and before we go to our first break here, I want to talk about what you have heard on the front lines. You're there at ground zero, so to speak. So, what are some of the biggest problems, some of the biggest pain points that you have heard with women and breastfeeding?
Yeah, a lot of it comes down to education and not knowing what the norm is, right? Something that we hear a lot about is, I don't think I'm making enough milk. My baby is constantly waking up at night. What am I doing wrong? And, teaching them that actually you're not doing anything wrong, that's actually a very normal protective behavior that babies have, is to wake up often at night to feed. And so just kind of, educating them through all of those kind of trials or issues that they feel like they're having. Again, that doubt starts to set in, and just really encouraging them and empowering them to keep on going, that they're doing a great job.
And when you see somebody that is just emotional, they're just like, this is something that I looked forward to, I feel like I'm a bad mom, my body isn't responding. What do you say to somebody like that that's in that kind of emotional state?
Sometimes it's not saying anything at all, like sometimes it's just giving them that space to be brutally honest with how they feel like they're doing as a parent. Like how many times can we say, like, I just don't feel like I'm doing a good enough job, and knowing that they can be in a space where they're not getting judged for feeling like that. So sometimes it's just giving them that space, really listening to themselves and listening to them, is what they need. And then pointing out like what they're doing great. And obviously they're there, they showed up, right? Like you came to the support group, you have your baby with you, your baby's thriving, and just pointing those things out, so that they can honor themselves and acknowledge like, yeah, wow, I am doing a really great job. This is just a really rough day that I'm having. So yeah.
And what do the dads say? Because I know that I was so ignorant about breastfeeding. I thought that it was like a faucet. You put the kid on and boom, faucet, milk for everyone, but it's not necessarily like that. So what do you say to the fathers that lack education in this?
So, it's really important, right? It's important, the support that we get outside of the home is really important, right? Like to be able to have these groups to go to, and to be able to go see a lactation consultant and all of that, that's all great. The support that you have at home is equally or even more important. And so, I encourage them to show up for their partners, to encourage them to be a part of it. Just because that mom is breastfeeding doesn't mean that you don't have anything to do. You can wake up with her at night, you can grab the baby, you can change the baby, you can grab her a glass of water, tell her that she's doing a great job. Tell her that you see her, that you see that she's tired, but like that you're there, if she needs someone to talk to, or to vent to, or to take the baby so that she can go take a nap or take a longer shower than usual. Just really showing up for that postpartum parent is so important.
Fellas, everyone, you heard Norma. Get out the bed and help your loved one, help your spouse. Let them have the rest. You had a support group just last week with the Pumping Basics, and then you had another support group with Breastfeeding Basics last month. What's on the agenda next?
So I think I'm going to focus on those two areas right now and just kind of flip-flop back every month. I've thought of doing, like a flange fitting class, which goes with pumping, and there's this, you have to know your size and then how that impacts your milk supply and all of that, and that probably doesn't make any sense to a lot of people listening, but yeah, I think I'm gonna stick to like the basics of breastfeeding and pumping.
So what has the feedback been so far with these groups? Because I'm more than sure you're getting, a couple aha moments and, I never knew.
I think that the most beautiful thing that I've witnessed is how these parents are showing up for each other. And they really, I'm providing the space, but they really come and create their own relationships with one another. One of the things, or this happened, I think it was like in the summer, one of our babies, where he was turning a year old. And mom had planned a birthday party and invited all, family and friends. And the only people to show up for this birthday party were the moms of the group.
Oh, wow.
And which was so beautiful to hear about the following week and how supported she felt. And so that was really cool. It's also really nice when my moms, well, not nice, but it's also really beautiful when they show up and they're just, completely just vulnerable, and these moms just are there to listen and encourage them. That's also really cool to see happen.
So, what led you to establish this support group?
Yeah, so, I wanted something that was available to anyone in our community. I feel like a lot of programs that are out there, you have to, yes, you can come, but you have to, be a part of this group. You have to be a part of this group, or you have to have these certain guidelines or fall under this or follow or go above that. And I didn't want that. I know that as a mom myself, I don't care what background someone comes from, as a parent, we can be supportive to each other. And so I just wanted to create a space like that.
And where do you feel as though breastfeeding services are now in this country? Do you feel as though that we need to expand, or where do you feel as though we lie?
I mean, I think we're definitely lacking, I'll just speak about Lancaster, because that's, where I'm at right now. I'm not going to speak on the country, but I think the whole country's lacking. But Lancaster, there's not many postpartum support groups out there. And that says a lot. There shouldn't be, I shouldn't have had to start up a group like this because one didn't exist. It should be something that, every, provider's office is offering, every hospital is offering, and things like lactation support should be free, and it's not, and so if your insurance isn't covering it, then that's coming out of pocket. And who has money to be, paying any kind of specialist on a weekly basis or forever, however long you have to stick with them until the issue gets solved. And, postpartum support sucks just all around this country.
So then with these support groups, are there like alumni that come back and volunteer, lend their stories, lend their voices? How does the give back look?
Yeah, so we're hitting 2 years in July. I started this 2 years ago. And so I'm seeing on average that our moms are sticking with us for about a year. So it is really cool to see, moms that started when their babies were like a month old. Now those babies are turning one and they're showing up for the new moms that are now joining the group. And it's really cool because they're the experts now, right? Like they're the experienced moms. So to kind of see that journey from like these brand new moms that were like doubting themselves to now they're like, girl, you got it. Like you're doing a great job. Like let me tell you what I did that worked really well. That's a really beautiful thing to see, to be able to witness.
Now, this initiative, going back to how you started because of your youngest child. So then this is personal for you then. Is that right?
I mean, absolutely, it's personal. As my oldest is 20 years old, or she's going to be 20. And I remember my breastfeeding journey with her was completely different. I have very few memories of that time period, but I remember that when I nursed her, I think I nursed her for about 3 months. My only memories were of doing it alone and having to always leave a room and go into a private space to do it. I have a vivid memory of it was a August day. She was born in July, so she was only a couple weeks old at this point. We were at a restaurant and she got hungry, and I had to leave the restaurant to go into this like hot car to
Oh.
nurse my baby. Why? You know,
Yeah.
and so to then fast forward, you know, for my youngest, where I nursed her wherever the hell I wanted, you know, and I really didn't care. And that was, you know, and I hope that and wish that for anyone, you know, that we're all able to do that.
And then, Norma, moving forward, what would you like to see done more or talked about more, in the realm of breastfeeding?
I think we just need to normalize it, and it needs to become something, you know. I think it would be a beautiful, beautiful day, that the day where you invite me or someone like me to come on to your show, and you know, people listening aren't going to be like, "What? Like, I never heard of that," or you know, that would be really, you know, awesome, because it would be so normalized in their life. They'd be like, "Oh yeah, you know, I know." You know, I know 20 Normas doing that in my community. You know, that would be really cool, but yeah, we just have to normalize it. We've sexualized, you know, the breast so much that, you know, people do not understand, and they really view breastfeeding as an awful thing. You know, and they make parents feel, you know, like I don't even know, like just not supported. And so you have parents that are choosing not to breastfeed because of what others think. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
So, Norma, finally, if somebody wanted to find some more information just on breastfeeding or on your advocacy work, where can or should they look?
So follow me on Instagram, Mama La Lechera, MamaLaLechera. I always post there about any kind of workshops that I'm doing. You're always, you know, always feel free to message me any kind of questions as well. But yeah, at Mama La Lechera on Instagram, and you can find me at the YWCA in Lancaster at 110 North Lime Street. Every Wednesday from 10:30 to 12.
Norma, this has been fantastic. Thank you for joining us on the Spark. Yeah, this was great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And on behalf of Scott Lamar and myself, we want to thank you for making us a part of your day and a part of your week. Coming up on the Spark this week, tomorrow, Scott Lamar welcomes Burwood Yost to our studio to discuss his latest F&M poll. And then on Tuesday, I speak with author Jamie Beth Cohen about her latest book and her memoir. And then on Thursday, Scott speaks with Ross Hetrick about the Thaddeus Stevens Museum that is opening soon. Cannot wait for that. I am Marquise Lupton. This is The Spark Weekly, and have yourself a nice week.